Welcome to a very special edition of the BSJ podcast on this New Year's Eve. Season 2, Episode 4. I'm your host, the American Redneck Buckshot Jones. In this podcast, we will be talking to independent professional wrestlers, managers, and promoters about their careers and about independent professional wrestling in general. So at this moment, I'd like to give a... sad day in our profession. My guest today is a guy I met in RPW 2.0. He's looking to break into the business. He was a part of a huge rookie class and is one of three that still remain in the business. My guest today, Kodiak Thompson. Welcome to the show, brother. How you been?
What's up, brother? I've been doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing all right. So, we all know how 2020's been.
Yeah, 2020.
Sadly, a lot of people who've gotten the virus have passed away. I'm not downgrading the virus, but you know, a lot of these lockdowns and shutdowns is overkill, especially in our profession.
I agree. Like the state of Ohio, we haven't even been able to wrestle for almost a year now.
Yeah, and it's been a year.
So
my last.
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost 2 years since I've even been in the ring. Like, I mean, I've gotten in and trained with a couple of my brothers, with my trainer, JT Storm, Connor Cross, Hex, Christian Steele, the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson. We all got in the ring last summer, but that was the last any of us has been in the ring. And we really was just training, trying to get back into rhythm of things because we thought things were going to start opening up.
Yeah. You know, they go ahead and say we're going to do a show. Next thing you know, Closet Democrat, Dizzy DeWine changes his mind and shuts everything down again. Of course, we have restrictions on everything, which... forces the OSC to not allow licenses or, you know, for to do a show or the whole nine. You know.
Right.
But as I say at the top of the show, I met you in RPW 2.0.
Yep. Me and Connor, well, Robbie Rampage, also known as Corey Spencer, me and him were starting to become friends, and one day he's like, "Hey, do you like wrestling?" I said, "I love wrestling. Why?" He's like, "I want you to come to the show with me." He's like, "And if you're interested, I'll get you into it." I come to the show, and I did not know that night that I was going to get chopped by 27 people, but... hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, there's three of you left. I mean, one had to leave because of he moved out of state for a job. Well, I think he'd still be here, but
yep.
So we all know how, like I said before, 2020 has been what it is, but
oh yeah, absolutely.
You and your lady, you want to go ahead and ask what happened for you and your lady in 2020?
Yeah, we actually we had a little son. which we found out at the beginning of 2020 that we were going to have Parker, which, you know, we were both very ecstatic, very excited. Came down to the last 2 months before he came, he kept wanting to come early and early and early. Well, finally he came. We were at the hospital in South Zanesville. You know, hats off to everybody that's there. I know they were just trying to do their job. But we found out that he had to go to Children's Hospital. And, you know, I come home to get more clothes because I knew we wasn't going home that day. And I get this phone call that I need to get back to the hospital now because they're transferring our son to Children's. So immediately I'm just thinking, you know, WTF is going on. And we get up to Children's. I mean, everybody from doctors to staff personnel are in his room when we get there. And one of the ladies talked to us, told us exactly what was wrong with Parker immediately upon arrival. And he ended up having heart surgery at 8 days old, a 5-hour surgery. So our minds were just running rampant for those 5 hours. You know, are we going to be able to see our son again? Is he going to make it through this? And here we are today with our little bundle of joy and couldn't be any happier.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You and Lady M on Parker, and you know, at least 2020 plus side for summer.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the last 3 months of 2020 has been good. I reconnected.
Yep.
With the girlfriend, and things are going great. And,
hey, as long as she treats you right, brother, that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
And absolutely she does. And then the happiest I've been in a very, very long time.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. You know, I've been thinking here lately, you know, life's too short to have enemies. And it's you're never, like Brody Lee, you're never guaranteed tomorrow. So, you know, it's best to have friends and family than to have enemies, and because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, you could be here today and next thing you know, tomorrow is your time. So I like to try to live my life as happy as I can.
Absolutely. But yeah, she, you know, when we was talking, I never mentioned anything about me being a wrestler, and she just happened to come across the American Redneck Buckeye General fan page. Yeah, that kind of intrigued her even more. And
yeah,
right now, and she'd only met a couple, you know, my wrestling family, our clique. She's met Joe Black, and she's met Christian Steele, and she's heard me talk to Connor Cross, and she's heard me talk to Chris Pax, and, you know, I told her about you and the Lady M, and, you know, your bundle of joy, and so she's kind of anxious to meet everybody, and nervous at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's... You never met JT yet?
Oh, God.
Okay, that's the one that's really driving the JT Storm.
If she can make it through JT Storm, she can make it through any of us.
You got that right. Like I said, I mentioned RPW 2.0.
What yeah.
Decide to get in the business and... Who were some of your influences, you know, growing up?
My influence, I watched wrestling all the time. Every year for Easter, my dad would buy me WrestleMania for Easter. Because at the time, you didn't have the WWE Network, so you had to pay the pay-per-view price. And every year, he would buy the pay-per-view, me and my cousin would sit and we'd watch, and sometimes he'd come over to my house and we'd watch Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown. My biggest influence is Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge. I've always liked his style of wrestling. I always kind of thought he was a badass. He wasn't afraid to tell you how he really felt. Another one is, obviously, I'm a face, so I like John Cena. He was another big influence to me just because of how he could get the crowd fired up. Like, watching John Cena made me realize, okay, this is why he's doing these things, and this is why he's not doing these things. So, those are some of my influences.
And what made you decide to be a pro wrestler?
Like I was telling you about Robbie Rampage, he's the one that came to me and asked me if I wanted to become a pro wrestler. And I was like, sure, why not? You know, because I loved watching it. So then I started, you know, he started training me a little bit. And then RPW 2.0 went south. And me and Connor still stayed connected. And he gives me a phone call one day. And I'm like, hello? He's like, hey, you know, Kodiak, what's going on? And I said, not much. Just sitting here watching wrestling. He's like, speaking of wrestling, how would you like to join my company? I was like, that would be awesome. You know, what do I got to do? And he pretty much told me we're going to start training and all that good stuff. So I was immediately intrigued into becoming this pro wrestler. And I wasn't the greatest out there, but, you know, when GWF started, it was a short roster anyway. So, basically, they just threw me in the ocean and said, go swim. You know, go show me what you can do. And as a face, typically, you just go out there and you take a beating. But I've learned a lot in those days, too. And I think, you know, the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson, had this podcast. And, you know, I've been busting my ass to get him to come back to wrestling. And I told him the only way I would do it is if he would be my tag team partner. So, and, you know, I still want that to happen because I feel that me being in a tag team, which is what I wanted in the first place, I love tag team wrestling. But with the short roster we had, I couldn't exactly be in the tag team. I had to be a singles competitor. And with me being a singles competitor and trying to learn and all this stuff on my own, it's kind of hard. So I definitely, like, if wrestling does come back open and I do get back into it, I definitely want to be a tag team with Rob.
All right. He'd be a good guy to pair you with.
Oh, yeah, especially because the way I see tag teams, they need to be veteran rookie type of deal. Because right. If you're a veteran rookie set up, then, of course, your rookie's going to get his ass kicked all the time. You know, that's just the way it goes. And then your vet's going to come in and get the hot tag, take care of business, win the match, whatever he's got to do. But he's also teaching you while you're there. You're not just partners.
Right. And he's got such a vast knowledge of the business.
Right.
And would only help you improve immensely.
Yep. And every bit helps. I went down to Alabama and with a bunch of guys. Rob was one of them. Paradise was another one, and Jay Miller was the other. And I actually got to wrestle Chris Michaels, the guy that trained John Cena, Randy Orton, and Batista at OVW. And he told me that if I keep up the good work, I have a lot of potential. To me, that means a lot.
Right. And you've been told that before.
Yep. I've been told that by you. I've been told that by Storm. I've also been told that by... he was ECW legend. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. Just
Incredible?
Yes, Just Incredible. That's it. I did a training seminar with him, and he told me that I have a lot of potential to go far in this business. And then I'm like a sponge. I like to just sit there and soak everything in.
You do. I just want to think those fuck. One thing that really grabbed me about you, you got that old school wrestler feel and look, which today you ain't, there really ain't, especially in WWE. Everybody thinks you got to be this muscle head to be a pro wrestler. No. I mean, look at Dusty Rhodes and, you know, one guy that I've compared you to, just, you know, just by the facial features, that's Dick Murdoch.
Yep.
Guys like that, or later in life, Adrian Adonis. Guys in heavy machinery and
absolutely,
Otis, yeah. Otis, I mean, athletic, athletic as hell.
Oh yeah. Like Kevin Owens is more like my size of a guy.
Yeah.
And no, the stuff correct. That I see him do, I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't picture myself doing that. But it, at the same time, it gives me, if he can do it, I can do it.
Right. Another old school look guy. Fight Owens, fight.
That's right.
I mean prize fighter type look.
Yep.
That's what wrestling needs also. I mean, yes, have some of your muscle guys, you know, like Hogan was and Jesse Ventura and, you know, superstar Billy Graham.
Oh, yeah.
And guys like that.
Even
guys earlier, you can go over it again. So who trained you?
Well, there's two people that trained me. Robbie Rampage was one of them, and JT Storm was another. JT Storm did most of it, but Robbie taught me my basics, like, okay, this is how you run the ropes. This is how you take bumps. This is how you take a front bump. This is how you take a belly bump. You know, he taught me all the basics that I needed to know to get in the ring. And then I got with Storm. He taught me lockup, you know. Take, you know, drop toe holds, takedown, just the little stuff that I needed to know to get me by. And then, like, there was a couple times that me and Connor Crossins went to the Storm Dungeon and trained a couple times together. And we were, the last time, Storm told me, he's like, I'm not going to tell you guys anything. Just start from lockup and go see, you know, where it goes. Of course, we couldn't do any bumps, but we were just chain wrestling. And I didn't even realize I was chain wrestling till after the fact that we were already done.
Nice.
And that's something that I never knew how to do either. Nor was I, like, I've ran a couple matches in my career. I don't say that they were great matches, but the ones that I've ran, I have called, you know, the entire match. Like, the street fight that I had with Caleb, I called that entire match. The last match that I had in IWA was Scotty Vicious. I called that entire match. I wouldn't mind, you know, working with Scotty a little bit, but like I want, you know, what I want is to learn more. I want to better my craft.
Right. And speaking of which, do you remember your first match and who it was against?
Yes, I do. My first match that I ever wrestled was against Sinister the Clown. And I lost, but it, you know, it was something to get you used to the crowd. I've actually had a few matches with the guy that did the Sinister gimmick. I will say I'm not going to be bashful. It's not, this isn't the place nor time to do that, especially in 2020. I will say that I've had a couple good matches with him. And the one good match was a triple threat for the IWA Livewire Championship. The night that I won it, I tweaked my MCL, or strained it, whatever they call it. But I was in a match between Vinnie Violence and Devastation. And I remember, you know, him and Devin were in the ring wrestling. I was just getting out because I was made heel. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I was made heel. So I was just trying to give the other two competitors a little time in the ring. And I went to get out of the ring and my foot got caught on the bottom rope. Well, here comes Vinny running at me, and he's no little guy by any means. So I'm trying faster to get my foot unstuck. And I went and I twisted my body the wrong way. And I felt this pop. And like I hit the ground, I crawled under the ring. I remember crying underneath there. I was under there for like maybe 2 minutes. And Lady M come underneath the ring. She's like, "Are you okay?" And I just shook my head no. And I probably had a concussion too. But like I was running off of so much adrenaline, I didn't know what was actually wrong with me. Got back in the ring. Was told to take it home. Got in. I end up power bombing, but in other words, Batista bombing Devastation. And he did a lot of the work. Like, I got him flipped. He helped me, you know, lift him up. And I powerbombed him and just, like, kind of laid right on top of him. And to this day, I still don't know how I was able to powerbomb him with my MCL on my left foot hurting as bad as it did. But, like, I was heel. And when I won that title, like, I so much wanted to react with the crowd because, you know, that's my first title and that's all I was used to was being face. And all of a sudden, I was turned heel.
Right there answers my next question. What all titles have you held in your very young career?
I've actually only held one title. And I've held it for about 5 months, and that was the IWA Livewire title. However, I have been in multiple championship matches. I've been in like 5 IWA championship matches. 3 of them was with, I can't think of his name right now. But he helped me a lot, and I thought that he brought out the best in me in the ring. A few people had their differences with him, but he kind of was like this bigger brother that was showing me, you know, he made me look good and himself look good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've been in multiple tag team championships, come close to. Actually, yeah. The one I came close to winning, I got clocked in the head because I was holding you up and you happened to duck.
Yeah, and you just took that straight to the head. I mean, that Jay Miller took that chair and
clocked me right on the head with it.
It sounded like a shotgun. Wow.
And it didn't even, like, the funny thing is, he hit me, like, right on the back of the head. But it was just enough impact to make the sound, but it didn't hurt. It did not hurt at all.
Right.
And I remember after that match, though, because Rob Johnson was in that match, too, because it was a triple threat. And I remember running to the back, yelling at him for using this chair wrong. And he's like, I didn't use it that way. And I swear, we got into a big argument about it. I said, which side of the chair do you use? And he showed me. I said, that's the wrong way. I said, I've been in so many street fights. I know, like, I was never really taught how to use weapons. But like I said, I was just kind of thrown out there, told go do it. And just kind of had to learn on the fly. But I think that's how I learned best, though, was on the fly. And what a lot of fans and people don't realize is I wear hearing aids, and I do not wrestle with them in. So it makes things even harder for me and, you know, my partner to communicate.
Right. Yeah, me and Rob had that discussion too about which side of the chair to use.
But, you know, everybody makes mistakes. He's actually mentored me a lot, especially when we were on the road traveling. We've traveled to Indiana. We've traveled to West Virginia together. I wrestled in a battle royal that had Sammy Guevara in it. Me and Rob were in it. And the promoter said, I don't care, just as long as Sammy wins. He's like, I don't care how you get eliminated. So we kind of did this double elimination type of deal. Like, he eliminated me, but end up getting himself on the outside on the apron. And I just walked up, grabbed his feet, and he took the bump right on the side of the apron. And it makes me cringe to even think. But he saw the potential in me, and he knew that it would help better me.
Right, yeah, the dastardly ring apron. I remember taking a suplex on the ring apron, and I still have problems with my hip today.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do that. I mean, I would bump there if it needed to be done for business, but I definitely want paid for that show.
Right.
Because a lot of shows I didn't get paid for, and a lot of shows I didn't want paid for. You know, I was doing it because I ran off of adrenaline. Which usually a lot of us, you get in there, you take your back bump, the adrenaline goes right through the roof. And, like, that's all I did it for, you know, those special needs. I have a sister that's special needs. So, like, when those guys would come to our shows at IWA, I would make sure that I went for them, you know. And to this day, I actually work at my, you know, shoot job with a guy that is special needs. And every day, he will come up to me and talk about what happened on wrestling. And, like, it's just those 5 minutes makes my day because I know that I'm taking time and it's making his day.
Right.
And I told my boss that I want to print off a picture that I did for when I was wrestling to sign it and give to him because I think that'd mean a lot to him.
Right. That's awesome, brother.
And, like, that's my thing. Like, those guys, I wouldn't make them pay for a pitcher because that pitcher means so much to them. And, like, to us, it's only, you know, a couple bucks that we wasted on getting it printed right. off, whatever. But to me, it goes so far. And I don't know if you remember one show we did. I actually had my sister, like, ringside, and a bunch of us took a picture. Yeah. It was, we were in Belmont. Yeah. Yeah, I still wish I could find that picture so bad, but I can't remember who took it, and I know I didn't get it, so it's just like, man, I wish I had those pictures.
Right. Now, do you remember what company you had your first match with?
It was GWF. I never... RPW 2.0, I never wrestled in the ring for. That's just the company that kind of was going to give me my start. I had managed Robbie Rampage a couple matches. So, you know, it was good. It was a good start. And then, you know, they went out of business. And then, like, I just wasn't, like, happy just at GWF. That's where I had my first match, was GWF. I just wasn't happy, you know. I wanted to get better. And, like, you pulled me to the side. The only way to get better is you keep doing it. You do more than just one show a month. And so I had contacted the promoter, Lady M, and who she was with at the time, see if I could come down there and wrestle for them. Brought my gear. And then they, of course, you know how indie shows go. You know, people come, people don't. And I had a match with Jay Miller. Had I known that that was going to turn into a year-long feud, I would have never guessed it. But There was some good times. There was some bad times. I wasn't proud of a lot of them because I knew my capability was so much more than what it was and what I was giving.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. I think a lot of us feel that way. You know, when we're in this business and we get in the ring and we think against ourselves or, you know, to critique ourselves or part of ourselves for how we perform.
And to this day, there's only one match that I've actually watched back. And that was a GWF show. You remember the one we did out there by Steels at the fairgrounds?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only match that I've watched back. The rest of my matches, I don't want to watch them because it just, like, I beat myself up because I see the mistakes that I made, and I'm like, Kurdiak, you know better than that. You know better than what you just did. Why did you do that for? You know, I start second-guessing myself, like, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I'm so much better than what I'm actually showing everybody. And that's why, like, I tell Storm all the time, you know, I'm so eager to get back in the ring and show people what I actually can do.
Right. Right, we're all... What other promotions have you worked?
I've worked one in West Virginia. I don't remember the name of it. There's a couple of them I didn't remember the name of it just because they were like battle royals and stuff like that. I went to Ironton About 3 years ago. It was like the day before, it was like the week of Christmas. And they were doing a show outside, and they needed somebody to be Bobby Brown's partner, so I did it. I actually got paid for it, you know, my travel down, and Bobby bought me dinner, and they let me stay at their house, and I got up, went to work the next day. But the main promotions I've worked for was, there was another one in Akron. I can't remember what the name of it. It was for Jay Miller when he was promoting. But that's when I met Justin Credible and James Ellsworth. But the two promotions were GWF and IWA. Those were the main promotions I worked, you know, monthly. Until GWF came to a close. And then IWA came to close, and I just, a lot of the drama is what really, like, some of the promoters had really had gotten to me. So, you know, I just seen myself out, waited for a better time. So I didn't quit, but I didn't really keep wrestling either. And then by that time, 2020 came around, and none of us are allowed to wrestle at all.
Yeah, we all take them sabbaticals. Sometimes I have, on several occasions. Okay, in your brief career, what were some of your best? Who was your best match, and who do you think was your worst?
My worst was Devin James. Like, I was not proud of that match at all. My best match was probably against, it was a heavyweight championship match for the IWA. And I still can't think of the guy's name. But we had wrestled a few times, and that's when I started doing the curb stomp there for a while. Because he was allowing me to do that to him. So that's why I started doing that move. You know, I was so into everything else. Like, music was more important to me. Just everything else seemed more important than what was actually going on in the ring for me.
Good.
The tag team match, the triple threat that we were all in, that was probably my second best match that I was in. And then the third match would have been the one where I faced the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson, at the fairgrounds.
Right. Who do you like working with?
I like working with you, Steel, Connor. I would love to actually work one of my best friends, Robbie Rampage, but, like, everybody has life, and life goes on. People get injuries. And, like, that, to me, if we were able to have that one match, I think everything would come full circle. You know what I mean? Because he's the one that got me into the business.
Yeah.
And then, like, it would actually bring it all the way around for me. But, yeah, I would love to have, like, a one-on-one match with you, or a tag team match. because I feel that I could learn so much from you because you've been tag team for as long as I have known you. You've always been in tag teams.
Yeah, we all know my history of tag team partners.
Yeah, they like to be cruds and stab you in the back.
So, Robbie Rampage, who else would you like to work that you've never worked before?
Somebody that I've never worked before. Man, even I've wrestled him. So, it's hard to say. I've been on Chris Hex's team. We've been in a six-man before, but I've never actually went up against him. And I think that me and him, or even Connor Cross, like, I've faced him briefly in a gauntlet match, but never have we actually had a one-on-one
match. Yeah, see, I would like to see both the matches. You against Hex, you against Connor, and for a long time, I've been wanting to see Chris Hex versus Connor Cross. The three guys left from that rookie class. I mean, the matches right there, I would actually want to watch.
I wouldn't actually mind it being a triple threat match, because knowing the three of us, we kind of came into business together. And we kind of know each other. And a lot of the times, you know, when we're just out at our training headquarters training, you know, those are the two that I'm normally training with, you know, like doing my moves to. So, you know, they know. And like Connor, like, I feel that if me and Connor had a match, we wouldn't even have to talk. It would just be like, all right, this is the finish. Let's go out there and do it in the ring. You know, whatever comes first. You know, I'm not going to speak to you. You're not going to speak to me. Let's just go out there and see what happens. And I think it would turn into a really good match.
Now, who would you refuse to work with?
Caleb? Vinny, just because I've been concussed so many times in matches that I've worked him in. So it's like, I don't want to put myself in harm's way more than what I've had to.
Right.
If you see where I'm coming from there. There's not a lot of people out there. I will say Bobby Brown. Like, he's a good guy. I like him. But when he gets in the ring, he's a bit stiff. And I'm no little guy.
Right.
But I'm no big guy either.
I remember there's a tag team match. It was me and Patriot Sniper, IWA. We work in, you know, Bobby Brown and, Jiminy Christmas, his tag team partner. Yeah, his name's a
I know who you're talking about. The American...
Yeah.
The American Nightmare?
The All-American Nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah.
His name's right there, and I talked to him on occasion on Messenger. That's terrible. My old age is going.
It's not just you, brother. I can't remember his name either. But, I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah, and... I sent a picture of him, and Patriot Sniper was almost like, "Them guys are big." I'm like, "Well, they're wrestlers. They're pawns. These are former MMA fighters." I'm like, "So?"
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. I'm pretty sure that Bobby Brown was a former MMA fighter.
I got in a ring with him, and them guys, he wasn't so stiff with me. I mean, them guys are great, and I'm proud of them both, and they're tremendous guys, some of the best in the business, and they're underrated. And I think if they went to a tryout, the Ring of Honor or NXT or AEW, I think, you know, they'd at least make
it. Yeah, I think they would make it, especially as a tag team. Yeah, they would definitely go pretty far.
That's it.
Yep, Mike Sark. That's who it is.
Both guys. And they're both fabulous. You know, great attitudes. And they'll help anybody, you know, in the ring and with advice. And, you know, working with them before a show. And them two guys are great. Fabulous human beings. Both of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who that one guy was that I wrestled. His, it was, he was a tag team, Chris something. I can't remember his name now, but his real name's Chris. Christian or something like that. And I did a triple threat match to see if I would go on to – it was a fatal four-way match. No, it was triple threat. Yeah, it was triple threat for the IWA Heavyweight Championship. And he ended up winning it, but I took a tower suplex off of the top rope. And the other guy that was in it, he wore a mask. I can't remember his name either. But I was up on the top rope, and Chris jumped up, like, on the inside. And he was, like, grabbing hold of me, getting ready to suplex me. And he said, "Whenever you're ready, let's go." He's like, "As soon as I nod my head, he's going to grab me and we're going." Well, at this time, I was kind of frightened because I seen how tall the other guy was. And he was standing on the bottom rope. And, of course, Chris is already on the top rope with me. And I'm like, "I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it." He's like, "Yes, you can. Whenever you're ready, go." Well, that's all I heard was "go." And I end up jumping, like lifting myself, like kind of flipping, and end up doing that all by myself. I'm the one that made that suplex. Nice.
Was it Chris Douglas?
Yeah, Chris Douglas. That's who it was. I would love to wrestle a match with him again because he was another one of those guys that he knew what he was doing. And his nephew is the one that I wrestled a lot for the heavyweight championship. I would lose, but it was bringing out the best in me. And it was something that both Lady M nor Caleb had saw. And they seen that it was good. Like, it was drawing.
Yeah, I worked Chris before in tag team match. Another guy with a tremendous attitude.
Oh, he's such a good dude.
Young talent. Great, great guy.
Like I told him that I couldn't hear. He's like, "You won't be able to hear me in the ring." I said, "No." He said, "Just follow my lead. Remember, the end of the match, you're taking a tower suplex. So when I tell you to take it home, you know, start making your way to the top." He's like, "And when I come at you," he's like, "don't let me just get up there." He's like, "If I'm coming at you, punch me a couple times, you know, make me stumble back. And then when I finally get to you, that's when you're toast." I said, "Okay." But he was such a great dude. I feel that I can learn a lot from him too.
Right, and he's going to be on here in the future, podcast.
I would love to listen to any
difference you see at the early part of your career from when you came in now compared to what some of these guys are coming into after you, even though a lot of it couldn't do anything because of COVID. Do you see any difference, if any?
I do. The difference I see from where when I was trained and I was brought in is now everybody wants it to be a spot fest. You know, you don't go out there. The way I was trained, you go out there, you tell a story. Like me, I'm a short guy, so I'm more than likely going to make you tap out before I actually get you down to pin you. So my story would be, okay, I'm going to go after the legs. I'm going to go after his neck. I'm going to go after his arms. This entire match, I'm going to try to get it. And then I'm going to probably be denied more than twice, you know. And then when I finally do get it, that guy's going to tap out. Like, that's the way I was taught was, you know, it's about a story. Wrestling is supposed to be a story that is told inside a wrestling ring. And I just don't see it anymore. Like, even on TV. Like, I see, like, I watch WWE and AEW. I see some matches in AEW being spot fest matches. Quite honestly, the only reason I watch Monday Night Raw is because one of my favorites today is Bray Wyatt. I've liked him since he was the Eater of Worlds, and he did that gimmick, and then he became the Fiend, and I loved it even more. And now he's with one of my favorite divas, Alexa Bliss, which is from yours truly, Columbus, Ohio. And, like, I think that Bray is bringing the best out in Alexa, because I've never seen the stuff that she's doing now with Randy while Bray's not there. It's like gold.
Right. All right, now let's talk about IWA Ohio. You were there for the last year of IWA Ohio.
Yeah, well, it was almost a year and a half, something like that, because we were at the Fun Center for a whole year, and I was there for every match, every show. So, because there was a couple shows that, right before we went to the Fun Center, it was like a couple months or so before we went to the Fun Center, we were doing shows elsewhere. But yeah, let's talk about IWA.
Okay, you were close with management. What do you think was the issue that caused the problems and the issues with not within, also within management, but with management and the boys and the gals in the locker room?
Towards the end, I thought that, you know, everybody wasn't listening to nobody. Like, their matches came up, and they're just like, okay, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. Sorry for swearing. I'm going to do whatever I want, and that's it. And I don't give a flying hell who cares. And it wouldn't be what was on the card. It wouldn't be what anybody had talked about. And that I think that had a lot to do with it. As far as management, I think that Caleb knew for a long time that once he took over and, you know, the fans stopped really coming, that he knew. At least I think he knew. You know, because at this point, you know, he wasn't communicating with Lady M at all. And he is actually the reason, speaking of management and him and running the show, he's actually the reason that I was turned heel. Because I got with Lady M, we started dating in real life. Well, he said that we couldn't do, you know, she wanted to be with me out there because of Rob Allen, which he's a jerk too. But he was trying to get a little too close, if you will. Trying to overstep some boundaries that he shouldn't have been stepping. So I had come in the picture and I put a stop to it. Well, Caleb told me they have to turn me heel because there's no way that I can turn Brenda face. Now, reality, I could have turned her face very easily. Because that's how I could have tore the asylum from the inside out.
Yeah.
You know, I could have made the one half of the leaders of asylum, you know, persuade her, hey, this is what we really are doing. And it would have turned her face and it would have kept me face. Because when I was heel, believe it or not, I know a lot of people like being heel. I do not. It's not me. I'm not that type of person. Yeah, you know, I'm not a mean person in real life, so it's hard for me to be a heel. Not just the running the match and calling everything. It's not just that. It's just I'm not a mean person. So it's hard for me to be mean to somebody right. else. And, like, I don't know. Like, you were there towards the end when I lost the belt.
Yeah.
That's when you started coming back. Did you notice me just, like, dragging the belt? Not really caring anymore. Like, I was just there.
Right.
I was just there.
See, that's how I felt. Before LFIW, everything going on, you know, management arguing with management arguing with us, and, you know, me arguing with friends, and which there's a lot of drama, you know, that was everybody, and I had
And that's what honestly did it for me was the locker room drama.
And my personal
like,
issues at home.
All
that made it. Toxic environment, my lab, but
I agree with that.
Vince Frost was still doing some of the writing at the time. Talked to me and asked me to come back and talk to Caleb.
Yep.
Some of the ideas. You know, Bobby Watson being an IWA original, talking to him. Asked me to come back.
Yep. Which Bobby Watson, you know, very good guy. Me and Lady M, Brenda, we are still very close to him to this day. He's even told me, you know, if you really want to get back into it, I can teach you some things and I can get you back in. But, you know, you have to show me that you're willing to do it.
Right. Yeah, Bobby.
And he's like, and you have to be willing because we went to a show in Indianapolis. Well, I was promised through Messenger pay, gas money when I got there. And then the ring wasn't set up. We had to help set up the ring. And then over top of that, they get the ring set up. And I was like, well, first, I'm not wrestling unless you guarantee me pay. And he's like, well, we'll see what we can do. And then they're like, can you guys, I was like, we need to wrestle first because we're, I said, especially if you're not paying us, we need to go on first. I said, it's going to be me versus Bobby Watson. And we're going to have a hell of a match. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. Can you do it without touching the ropes? That's what I said. What? Can you do it without touching the ropes? No. And that's when Bobby looked at me. He said, grab your shit. We're leaving. Even though I drove, he's like, we're not staying here. He's like, they don't want to pay us after they told you. And I even showed him the message that they had promised pay. and didn't want to pay us, so we left. Me, Brenda, her brother Jesse was with us, and Bobby Watson. Well, we're in Indianapolis, so it's like the middle of the afternoon, right? So we're like, well, let's just go sightsee for a little bit because we're in Indianapolis. So we went to the racetrack and took pictures and all that good stuff. Went downtown, walked a little bit. But, yeah.
Bobby's a heck of a guy. Watson. Good friend of mine.
He would be another one that I would love to have a one-on-one match with.
The very last IWA match, me and Connor for the IWA heavyweight title. Bobby was the best referee.
Great match.
Yeah.
He ref that whole night.
No, after the match was over, you know, me and Bobby, you know, Bobby gave me a hug and whispered something in my ear about the match, and which made me feel good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What does the future hold for Kodiak Thompson?
Well, it's actually, my ring name is Kodiak Kincaid. But I honestly don't know. You know what I mean? Like, as I'm talking to you, I'm sitting here watching a match on the WWE Network from Raw. That was a TLC match with CM Punk and Ryback. And it's just, you know, talking about it and watching it's just making me want to get in there and do it right now. But I know the circumstances. Hopefully 2021 is better. You know, Parker will be a year old and I can be able to go do what I love to do. Because Brenda's told me time and time again, she's like, I know you love wrestling. It's in your blood. It's in, you know, it's not really in my DNA because none of my other folks have done it. But they've supported me. And, you know, with, if wrestling comes back and the money's there, I honestly probably don't care what promotion it is. As long as, you know, they keep my family out of their mouth. If they just come in, do the show, and leave, you know what I mean? And not drag personal matter into the situation, that I will work with anybody and everybody.
They shouldn't be, you know, bringing, you know, other people's family members into the, you know, if they get a problem with you, that's fine. Somebody's got a problem with me, fine. I don't care. I'm a grown-ass man. I can handle it. Don't bring my family into it. Don't bring my girlfriend into it. Don't bring my kids into it. That's just ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Uncalled for and unacceptable.
And that's what I think a lot of it was, you know, they knew that me and Brenda were together and they didn't like it because they thought that management was kissing my ass. Oh, honestly, management wasn't writing the card when I got the title. That was a push because, you know, the writers, which was Connor Cross, management, and who was the other one that you said earlier in the show? Yeah, Vincent Cross, which I've had a couple good matches with him, too. I just wish that, you know, personal matter could be left out. Because I think that's what it was, is I'm a family man, and as soon as you bring family into it, I'm immediately pissed off. And, like, that's the way, I mean, it shouldn't be like that. You know, wrestlers, especially in the indies, you know, we should all want one thing. That's to sell out the show so we can make money, put on a good show, and tell a story. And at the end of the day, they win, you win, we all win.
No, there's so much ego involved anymore.
And that's another thing that I could not stand in wrestling is a lot of people's ego, it would go straight to their head.
Absolutely.
Okay, you're no better than I am. What makes you better than me? All because you're smaller? No. All because you've done it longer?
Right.
No.
Right. I mean, this guy's been doing it less that are, you know, better than the guys that's been doing it longer. But I don't mean they're
right
superior. I mean, some people just got more talent.
Right. Right. Like me and Connor Cross and Hex, we all started together, but those two learn faster than what I do. They pick up on things faster than I do. So it's easier for them to do it, catch on, and go right on. You know,
brother,
I mean?
You're still here. You're still, like you said earlier, and I agree with you. You're a sponge. You took all that in. And it shows.
Oh, absolutely. Like I told you earlier, you know, I think that if, you know, a company out there would, you know, put me in a tag team and just let me, you know, yes, obviously I want to be a face team, because then when we do win that championship, if we win it, see, and that's another thing, if you don't mind me rambling on, a lot of people get into wrestling because they want to win championships. To me, it's not about championships. If I win it, I win it. If I don't, I don't. As long as I go out there, and as when I go through that curtain, the crowd is cheering. And regardless if I win or lose, the crowd is still cheering for me. That means I gave it my all for them.
Right.
And that's why I'm there. You know, I'm there for the fans to give them, because they're paying their hard-earned money to come watch us entertain them. They want to be entertained. They don't want to pay to come see a shit
right.
show, if you will. So, yeah, you know, if they're paying, I don't want to spend my hard-earned money to go watch something that's just going to, that was a good spot, you know. I want to be entertained.
Right.
And, like, that's something you don't see anymore either.
Any advice you can give some of the younger folks or younger guys or gals that want to get in?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, after your first year, you're a rookie. I don't agree with that. You're a rookie as long as you're green. And the day that you walk out to that ring and you're not, you know, nervous is the day you need to stop, turn around, walk back through that curtain and take your boots off for good. Because I've always been told by, like, you, Storm, I've even heard it from Justin Credible, the day that you're not nervous is the day you need to
absolutely
leave the business. And here's another thing that Justin Credible told me. When I wrestled for the show that he watched and was in, he said, take the fall, take the pin. Because it was like a fatal four-way or some shit. See if we would make it into the next round of the tournament. So he's like, take the fall and lay there. He's like, regardless if you're a heel or a face, lay there until everybody's out of the ring.